Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is performer, mask maker, and teaching artist Holly Adams. Welcome to the show, Holly.
Hi, Tish.
Listen, I know you've been performing and doing creative work for over 25 years now. Did you start out knowing this would be your life's work, or was it something that evolved slowly as you were growing up?
Sort of a little bit of both. When I was growing up, I always enjoyed doing performing things, and both my parents were sort of involved in performing stuff. But I also had and continue to have a passion for science.
Really?
So I thought that I wanted to be a scientist or an astronaut, but spent all of my spare time doing theater.
Ah. And then, well, some people do say you're way out there, so you've got the astronaut part sort of resume, right?
I continued to have a love of astrophysics, actually.
Really?
Yeah. But the when it came time to actually make decisions, being that I had spent all of my adult life doing theater and in various guises and in various different programs, and I really thought about what is the daily life like, and I decided to room with a chalkboard and a pen and a paper and a computer probably wouldn't match up with my rather kinetic self.
Yes, I can't imagine you doing that. Behind a desk, no, calculating?
No. Well, I can calculate just on my feet.
Well, let's talk about mask making. I know you're a mask maker, and that's one of the prime things that you're proud of in your life. And masks have always been symbolic to me as a place for people to hide behind. But you use it for expression. Let's talk about that. How did that come about, even?
It's interesting that people think of masks as something to hide behind, because you might be hiding one piece of yourself, but what you're really doing is extracting something else. Something is always being channeled. There's always a connection between yourself and the mask, and if you'll excuse the expression, the spirit of the mask. Mm-hmm. And then the net result is however people are responding to you. Because people are responding to you in a certain way with your mask on. Mm-hmm. They're responding to that piece of you which is being channeled through the mask. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that you're hidden. Mm-hmm. It means that you're extremely revealed, but in only that one particular way.
Mm-hmm. So is it in some ways giving people permission to show other sides of themselves, whereas they wouldn't if they didn't have a...
That's an interesting question. I think it's not so much permission as it is a demand. Mm-hmm. You know, the mask commands you or guides you or however you want to think about it. Mm-hmm. To extract or highlight or perform or be in particular ways. And, I mean, even at Halloween, you know, as people put on a mask and then they behave in a particular way or along particular guidelines. You know, even if you have a paper bag over your head, you're still going to move and behave differently, and people will react to you in a different way. Mm-hmm. It's sort of permission. But it's also a choice and not something you can really avoid.
Mm-hmm. You have such an expressive face. I'm surprised you actually want to use masks, you know? Because, they always say the best actors are able to use their faces, and they can almost use them like a mask and express themselves in that way. When you're making masks, are they meant to be art pieces, or are they meant to be used for actors exclusively? Or is there a difference?
There is a difference.
Yeah.
And for myself, I would say some of them end up being both. And I only have recently started doing things that are intended to be enjoyed as things that are alive on your wall. But for the most part, I like to focus on performance masks, because when I'm concentrating on, again, this is going to sound really fruity, but channeling a character or a spirit or whatever, the mask sort of wants to be inhabited. That, again, that sounds crazy, but imagine it sort of like if you're writing a story or anything like that where you have characters, the characters themselves will bug you as a writer until you get it right.
Mm-hmm. And the same is true,
and the same is true of mask making. Mm-hmm. And then it's not complete. A play isn't complete until it's spoken, until it's up. Mm-hmm. A mask isn't fully alive until it's got a person in it.
Yeah, and when you're getting ready to create a mask, do you see a person and create from there, or do you just feel yourself making something and it develops into a character?
This is an interesting question. I don't think I see a person. I think sometimes I see movement or texture or color. But I'm mostly thinking about the qualities. And more often than not, there's music that bits of scraps of different kinds of music that run through my head. And I have to come back to a piece several times in its clay form first. And then again, when I'm working in the actual material itself, then it's sort of at a more heightened. Then I'm more thinking about what does it look like? The shapes of things, the size and shape of the eyes makes a tremendous difference. And that's something I have to do post-clay, you know, in the mm-hmm. actual material. Mm-hmm. And then once I'm in the paint stage, then I'm definitely thinking about what do you look like. Mm-hmm. But I often undo and redo something if it's not quite right.
So you start out with clay, and then it turns into, to make it wearable. What kind of materials do you actually use?
I've used pretty much anything you can think of at some point or another as a mask maker. I really enjoy working in aquaplast because it lasts forever, and the more people that have the opportunity to wear a mask, the more sort of alive it is. And you know, historically, masks were part of a company or a family and were used and used and used and used and used. And that was part of that's part of their legacy. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy that. And in today's day and age, too, if I'm making masks for a school or a company and there's going to be multiple people wearing them, it's important to have the material be something that can be cleaned. You know,
I never thought of that.
Yeah, like leather and latex actually become sort of like petri dishes.
I hadn't thought of that. And those are probably the materials they used in the olden days, correct?
Leather, wood, porcelain, stuff like that.
Wow, that is interesting. So science has come into mask making.
New
materials.
That's not to say that I never work in those other materials. There's a time and a place for them, and I really enjoy that. Uh-huh. But that's not, you know, if people are going to spend money as a school or whatever, they want something that will belong to the school for 100 years and that 120 students a year can use. So, you know, it's practical.
That does make sense, yeah. Listen, you have described yourself as a stage combat choreographer. What in heaven's name is that? I see you in army fatigues marching across a stage. What is this?
No. I actually recently did combat choreography for a movie, too, so I'm very excited. Yeah, mostly combat choreography for the stage is making the fight moments, whether they're sword fights, fist fights, knife fights, or even if they're tumbling moments, comic sort of circus-like bits, or death moments, or people staggering around and dying, making them as interesting and safe and involving as much of the environment or as little of the environment as possible, or funny or tragic or whatever. And that's something that I continue to build my repertoire, something I take a lot of pride in continuing to learn. You know, I mean, you can never learn too much. Uh-huh. And anything I do, I like to continue to stuff my brain.
Does that take in dance as well? It seems like it would, that kind of choreography.
Yeah.
So is there a place where you can actually study this, or do you, as you do more and more productions, you just learn more of what needs to be done?
Well, I think that depends on your focus. Hmm. You know, certainly there's brilliant fencing masters that you can learn from, and they will teach you fencing. Mm-hmm. And then you could take various martial arts, and they will learn you, teach you those martial arts, and so on, with circus skills and this, mm-hmm. that, and the other thing. And what I do is two things. One is learn as much of those things as will be applicable to a set. Mm-hmm. But also, I have to keep in mind that it's sort of the inverse of real. You know, in a martial art moment, my goal is to actually either maneuver us to a point where you're no longer a threat to me, or to actually injure you.
Mm-hmm.
On a stage or for a movie, my goal is to make it look like that, but for it to actually be very, very safe and cheat it out so that the audience can see the whole thing.
How interesting. Well, what movie did you work on? Can you talk about that?
Waiting on Elfie. It's Between Two Hitmen. I think it's slated to come out in the fall.
How interesting.
Yeah.
Does that give you a taste for wanting to do films again?
Or do you
prefer
really
stage?
Care.
Really? Really?
Like, whatever.
Some people, you know how some people do prefer stage?
Yeah.
Because it's more immediate and, you know.
No, I just really enjoy the give and take of weight and moments, and about how I love that different weapons are meant for different things. You know, the size and the weight, mm-hmm. and the intention and the shapes. You know, is this a gut carver or a arm lopper? Or is this one of those weapons that you can write your name and phone number on someone's chest with, you know? Because it changes the meaning of the combat. And so it doesn't matter to me for whom I'm doing, and I just have a really good time. And I like the whole, like, being able to appear to kick somebody in the face and then swirl around and stab someone else in the side and all that. It's just fun.
Yeah, yeah.
It's probably the most indulgently fun, non-socially oriented thing I do.
And you can get out some of your frustrations without really hurting anybody, I assume.
I don't. Uh-huh. It's playtime. And you really shouldn't bring your frustrations to a combat scene anyway.
Temptation. I know you're also, you use clowning as an aspect of your creativity. Let's talk about that. Do you use it for politics or for serious stuff, or actually, you know, the original word clowning was funny, to a lot of people?
Yeah. Well, clowning is a really ancient tradition, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All over the globe. Mm-hmm. Everybody has clowns, and they actually perform a really important function in a community. I sort of began studying clowning by studying commedia dell'arte, which is one form of clown, mm-hmm. and worked on from there. And the things that there's various aspects that I particularly enjoy about, you know, sort of the traditional clowning, mm-hmm. type stuff. Mm-hmm. One is, I really do love it and appreciate it as a sort of lubricated mechanism for a group of people to become more self-aware and provoke change.
Social change,
a little sugar makes the medicine go down, you know, because the clown also has to be, it's not just about the other, it's about the self,
uh-huh.
right? It's no, mm-hmm. you can't just finger point and expect people to appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's about you, if it's about the character, then we can choose to recognize ourselves or not. Hmm. It makes it a little easier. I'm oversimplifying, of course.
No, that makes sense to me, actually.
So I like that kind of stuff, and I like the combination of instigation and poignancy and ridiculousness and all of those things that clown means, mm-hmm. you know, is it means the most tender thing and the most stupidest thing.
It's also scary. It's a scary image. I mean, Stephen King has used clowns a lot in some of his horror novels, and they're scary and they're menacing and they freak out kids, you know?
Yeah.
And I've always thought clowns were kind of scary myself.
I think that comes out of a couple of things, you know, and I haven't spent my time studying the exact anthropological force.
Oh, Holly, there's
behind
a new
that.
Thing for you to do.
No, I spend my time doing the anthropology and sociology of real clowns and their effectiveness in communities, like in Central Asia. But I think, off the cuff, that concept comes from an awareness of the often false agenda of modern American clowning.
Because
if the traditional place of the clown is to be basically in service to the community, even if it's with instigation in a way that's also reflective on the self, you know, like I said, and in a way that's desired by the community. The community has set up the situation for it to be there, You know, mm-hmm. it's an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Then if I'm imposing a personal agenda, if I'm using that as an excuse, if I'm abusing that contract, that power, then that's frightening. And I think that's common in contemporary American clowns. And that is what's scary. Mm-hmm. It's the same reason why I think for us it harkens back to childhood and the other people that we trust and who we can sense on a deep level that they're lying.
Ah.
They're lying. They're lying with that smile. That's not their agenda. Their agenda is something entirely different and entirely self-absorbed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the frightening part.
So
same
so
as it would be for, you know, being in a terrible situation with a grown-up that you trusted as a child or a priest or whatever. You know, mm-hmm. it's that same mm-hmm. sense of frightened
mm-hmm.
so offness.
So clowns can be used as a symbol of what they were not traditionally meant for then, which is scary and not honest and so on.
But I think that's important
because that
distinguishes between people who are not actually clowns, like in the real sense,
right,
and
right.
people who are. And that's largely about honesty and about agenda.
Uh-huh. So you say that an American agenda and stuff. I know you've done clowning in Afghanistan and Russia and Italy. Isn't that correct? What are the differences in regard to reaction? Is the American reaction really that different? Because you were talking about the traditional American version of clowns.
Oh, no. When I say that, I don't mean all contemporary American clowns are with this alternate agenda. All I mean to say is that that I don't live in other countries, so I can't tell you whether or not the idea of the clown can be abused in the same way that it has been in my own experience as an American.
I see.
But there are so many fabulous, amazing, brilliant, wonderful mm-hmm. contemporary American clowns here, there, and everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But the specific idea that clowns can be frightening in an American novel is about a specifically American experience,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm. So what were some of your experiences as clowning in Afghanistan? And didn't you go with Patch Adams to do some clowning?
I did. Yeah. It was actually the brainchild of an Italian filmmaker. And he, to bring medicine and food and a film crew and joy into, quote, post-Taliban, unquote, Afghanistan. I use the post-Taliban in quotation marks because mm-hmm. we were there in February of 2002, it must have been, and the Taliban were theoretically ousted from Kabul in December. So it's
mm-hmm.
it's nothing is an off on switch. And he invited Patch to be a big piece of that, and then there were clowns from every continent involved also.
You are listening to Out of Bounds on WEOS. My guest is Holly Adams, and I'm Tish Perlman. We were talking about clowning in Afghanistan and in other countries. Did you find that you had different receptions? Were you going there with a clown script, or were you doing improv? Or
I think each person that came brought a different set of understandings and expectations. I was really, really grateful to have a background in anthropology and to have a background in being in other places and other times than my own, and to have a mother who is a activist and social worker and theater person. That really helped.
That does
you know what
help.
I mean? That sort of you grow uh-huh. up with the sense of trying to be listening always on a really deep level mm-hmm. to what's happening around you so that you cannot mess it up. And that's what I brought with me. But people were absolutely starved for anything, because you have to remember that even bright colors were outlawed. No toys, colors, no kites, no music, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And there is actually a long-standing tradition of various kinds of performances and clowning in Afghanistan. And that's something that I hope to continue to re-foster, not just in Afghanistan, but in all of war-torn Central Asia, mm-hmm. to be in assistance to and a part of a re-fostering of those traditions before they're totally erased from cultural memory by mm-hmm. war and death and famine mm-hmm. and stuff.
Yeah, that's a really noble cause, I must say. You've been a teaching artist with Odd Fellows Playhouse and Youth Theater and Hartford Children's Theater Company in Connecticut.
And the Hangar.
And I've seen you around the Ithaca City School District doing some things in some of the schools. What is that like for you? What are the challenges of trying to teach children theater? Are they more open?
Differently. Mm-hmm. Differently open. I love it. And it depends. Like sometimes, for example, if I'm hired to go down to New York for a school thing, it's inevitably something very, very specific. Like they want me mm-hmm. to do a blitzkrieg of master classes about stage combat or physical theater or mask work or something like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas most of the work more locally is facilitating and midwifing students, a community of students creating their own work, finding their own voice, making it their own, and in the process learning about examining their own social interdynamics or curriculum or both. Mm-hmm. And it's a thrill. I totally love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've actually seen you in the schools. And you can
total blast.
You can see that your love for it just comes out and you're bubbling over with these kids.
Well, they have so much to teach me.
Yeah, and kids do still seem to be more open and not as guarded. I've noticed kids are more willing to jump in it a little bit easier than some of the adults that I've met.
Yes and no.
Really? Really?
You have your ultra-shy types no matter where you go.
Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah, yeah. You're a faculty member of the Community School of Music and Arts.
Yes.
What kinds of things are you teaching? The same drama and... mask making?
Yeah, it depends. It's a combination of what there's interest for and what I feel like doing in mm-hmm. any given moment, except for the Star Search program, which I totally love and do every summer.
What is that?
It's basically crash test dummy theater. We take about...
Explain that. Crash test dummy. Okay.
We have a full-length original musical and about 20-something adolescents. And 9 days with about 3.5 hours per day, everyone sings, everyone dances, everyone has a part, and there's no audition.
So everybody can participate.
So everybody's participating, and we hurtle towards the end of the 9 days at top speed, and erupt onto the scene, jumping over the barrier at the end mark there.
Is this an educational thing, or is this a real performance they do for the community?
It's a performance for the community, but it's an intensive education. Like, we deliberately give people stuff to do that they haven't had a chance to really work on, haven't had a chance to really do. Like, if you were to walk in and say, I can't sing, that automatically guarantees you'll have a solo. Guaranteed.
So it's sort of improv, but it's coerced.
No, it's
coerced.
A script. No, it's a script. You will be given a part.
I see.
With a thing.
Yep. But it's coerced. I mean, depending on what
you
say about yourself.
You signed up. It's boot camp. You signed up and you're there.
That sounds really
you
scary.
You belong to us now.
Oh, Lord.
Not for the faint of heart. But if you want to run and leap joyously into the world off the diving board. That's what it is.
when can we look forward to this performance?
Oh, there's two. The first session is the first 2 weeks of August, so it'll be the second Friday of August, and then the fourth Friday of August. I can't remember what the dates are. Sorry.
Yeah, well, we'll see some PR for it, but it is coming
look
up rather than behind us. That's great.
Yeah.
You're a board member of the New York State Theater Education Association. What do they actually do?
A lot of things. Mm-hmm. Mostly what we've been focusing on in terms of intensity is getting teacher accreditation. I'm not sure if that's a word.
Uh-huh.
So that you can actually uh-huh. have a teaching degree in theater. So that to just like it's required, if you're going to teach high school English, mm-hmm. you actually have to have your teaching degree in English. Concept.
It's an interesting idea, isn't it?
Oh, my God. Stop the madness. No, so it's along those lines, and now that's happened. It's very exciting. The second thing is to have performance be one of the requirements of New York State education, graduating.
Really, for graduation.
Yep. Although I believe right now performance, you can either do dance or theater to fill the requirement.
Uh-huh.
But that's great.
Oh,
you
it
know,
is.
It's a way to help ensure that our children don't get shortchanged.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And the another thing that we have been focusing on is just advocating for the benefits of the arts,
mm-hmm.
in terms of being a medium to learn other things.
Oh, it is.
Academically,
mm-hmm.
but also, as study after study shows, to help formulate a sense of self, a sense of community, some positive social skills, and a brain that's able to process mm-hmm. academic and other information well.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
that's really showing up. Kids do better on their SATs if they've been made to do various arts programs.
Yeah, that's one of my pet peeves, too, that they're cutting arts out of schools everywhere.
So it's
I think it's a shame.
Heavy on the advocacy,
uh-huh.
trying to develop awareness and stuff like that.
Oh, that's God, that's great. You originated a neighborhood troopers program in the housing projects.
Oh, and yes. Back when dinosaurs roamed the earth.
Somewhere in Connecticut, right?
Yeah. Yes.
But what was that about? In housing projects, what were you trying to do? Empower people, I assume, in some way.
Yes, I suppose so. It's hard for me to think. I try to avoid the sort of knight in shining armor thing, because
go in and save the village, missionaries.
You know, what happened was I was employed to do an arts in the parks program, mm. and we were going around doing things, and these two particular neighborhoods, the kids were just famished. You know, they said, oh, please come back. We want to do more. We want to do this. Wouldn't it be really great? More, 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 more.
Mm-hmm.
So then I said, why not? Why not more? And approached the company for whom I was working and said, hey, what do you think of this? And so that's how that was the origin, basically.
Uh-huh. And you know, what were you actually doing? Street theater or?
Sort of. Mm-hmm. mean, the first year, basically, I wandered through the neighborhood saying, hey, you want to be part of a company where you decide what people are going to shut up, sit down, and pay attention to? Your words, your ideas, and people really will pay attention? What do you think? And that was how we began, and we started with them creating original small bits. Mm-hmm. that arose out of exercises and improvisational work. And in the second year, they wrote a musical called,
really?
It was called God Bless a Child, and it was about some things that you might imagine that they would write about, but which uh-huh. were really important to them. And this was years ago, but it was about torn up families and mm-hmm. split loyalties and the pressure to participate in gang behavior
mm-hmm.
and the effect of drugs on people and
wow,
rain and songs and...
Uh-huh.
It was big.
That's amazing.
And then it's continued to really grow.
I was going to ask you, is it still continuing?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't know how many now, maybe four or six troops, and they go lots of places and do lots of things and go on tour, and
uh-huh.
that's
and
there. I'm here.
Do you ever feel like you want to participate, continue to participate?
No.
No? You're on to other things now.
Well, I don't live in Connecticut, so...
Oh, it can't be translated into New York.
Yeah, it's a different thing. I mean, but I think that what I value about that is what I continue to value, to try to be a midwife, if I can, if people will give me that honor, to be a part of people creating their own voice, their own strength, their own peace.
Mm-hmm.
That's very exciting.
We are almost out of time. You're going to be teaching in Australia next year.
Yeah, I hope so. That's mostly.
It's still up in the air?
It's a 99% thing.
Oh, great. That's terrific.
At the Silk Road Summer Course
uh-huh.
at the University of New South Wales. I'll be in academe.
Oh, that's great. Well, I do hope it happens. We have run out of time, and I want to thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks.
Out of Bounds is produced by Tim Reppert at Rep Studio in Ithaca. We are a project of the Women's Interfaith Institute in Seneca Falls. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. If you want to talk to us, you can email us at weos@hws.edu. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.